Okay, welcome to part two of hair care and halacha. The third part, God willing, will be next week, and that will be Rabbi Ziering speaking on beards and peyot. For tonight, dyes, plugs, and mirrors, hair care for men, question mark. Once again, I thank Shomer Shabbos for hosting, and I note that nothing I say should be taken as psak. For psak, please ask your shul rav, your posik. So, by way of introduction here, well, two-step introduction. I'm about to discuss baldness. Before I discuss baldness, I will note that anything I say about baldness as in any way a negative condition should not be insulting for anybody. I am in the same category, if not in terms of baldness. You know, I developed, I don't know, this has got to be 12 years ago, vitiligo, in which first my eyebrow went part white, and then I got the white spot on my mustache. And at the time, the dermatologist who diagnosed it said, you know, you should think maybe you want to dye it, maybe you want it can distract people, it looks funny. I decided not to, just because I'm stubborn. But my vitiligo puts me in the same category as people who are follically challenged, as the phrase goes. But it's important to frame baldness as an undesirable condition in terms of the way we look at this halachically, as we'll see.
Yul Brynner didn't mind it.
Yul Brynner did not mind. He seems to have made a nice career about it, with it. But if you take a look at source number one, I brought you the pasuk from the beginning of Halach Beis, the story, the famous story with Elisha, right? Vayal misham beit el, v'hu ola baderech, unarim ketanim yatzu min ha'ir v'yiskal subo. Little kids came running out of the city. When they saw Elisha, they made fun of him. Vayom rulo, and they said to him, alei kereach, get up, bald one, get up, bald one. And that, you know, the story doesn't end well for them. But right there you see that it was considered an insult, and that plays through in the times of the Gemara, the story in the Gemara in Shabbos, Kufnun Beis. Amar le ha'u guzal, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. A fellow says Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, being a guza is no treat either. A guza, I think, is a eunuch. So the guza says Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, to make fun of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, Mehacha le karchina kamahavi. How far is it from here to karchina? And kereach, meaning someone who is bald. So how far is it from here to Baldsville, where the bald people live? Because his name is Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. We'll see in a moment whether that's actually associated with him being bald. We'll come back to that momentarily. But he makes fun of his name, how far is it from here to the place where people are bald? And he answers, from here to Guznaya, the place where people are guzoi, just like you. Gives as good as he gets. But if you take a look at source number three, you get another one. Ben Azai has a statement in which he says, all the chachamim in front of me are like a klipas hashum, are like the skin of garlic, meaning a very thin membrane, chutz min hakereach hazeh, except for this kereach, except for this bald one. And Rashi comments on that, as Tosfos notes in source number three, Hainu Rabbi Akiva. He says, that's Rabbi Akiva he's talking about, according to Rashi. The bald one is Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, who Rabbi Yeshua ben No Shel Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is named that because he is the son of the bald one, meaning Rabbi Akiva. And Tosfos says, Vakasha, this is really difficult. You're going to tell me, HaKereach HaZez Rabbi Akiva, that's the way you call Rabbi Akiva. He can't mention Rabbi Akiva by name. He has to use an insult to name Rabbi Akiva. So there's a whole discussion about whether, in fact, this is Rabbi Akiva, it's not Rabbi Akiva. But the point is, and the reason I bring it, is that Tosfos sees this as an insult. And then finally, the Mishnah in Bechoros, in source number four, talking about mumin, blemishes which disqualify a kohen from working in the Beis Hamikdash. And the Mishnah says, HaKereach Pasul, this is a mum. He can't work in the Beis Hamikdash. Now, how do you define kereach? Ezehu kereach? Kol she'ein lo shita shel seyar makefes me'ozen la'ozen. If he doesn't have a line of hair bridging from one ear to the other, if you have a line of hair going from one ear to the other, you're already not bald. That's a nice standard. He's got a generous standard. Is a kosher. If he has it, then he's still kosher. Right, so I think even around the back, I think even that's fine. But the bottom line is that hair is a sensitive topic. And the question is, may someone take steps to restore the hair of his youth, both in terms of baldness, the source that brought relate to that, but also in terms of the color? If his hair changes color prematurely and it looks funny, or part of it changes color, part of it doesn't, is he allowed to do anything about it? So the general rule is that we do recognize the importance of personal beauty in our lives. In our lives practically, in terms of it affects the way we live our lives, in terms of a person's self-image, even in terms of our relationship with Hashem, as we'll see in a second. Is it objectively bad or good for a Jewish man to pursue beauty? Is it objectively good or bad?
Depends on the purpose.
Depends on the purpose, meaning?
If it's arrogance,
maybe it's a problem. Okay, in general, we are against arrogance. I hope we can agree on that. So the truth of the matter is, you could find sources that are for and against, in general, without even going into the motivation. We have sources which degrade beauty as a misrepresentation of human value. It's an attempt to deceive people. Shmuel goes to coronate the new king, and he wants to coronate Eliyahu, who looks nice and handsome, and he's told, yeah, because you see with your eyes, Hashem says, but I see with the heart. Avshalom is of extraordinary beauty, leads people astray. Right? The classic pasuk in Mishlei, the last parak in Mishlei, Sheker Achein Vehevel Hayofi, right? Beauty is false, the charm is vain. At the same time, though, we have sources which suggest that beauty does represent a person's value. Right? I brought you the Gemara in Baba Basra, source number 5, which says, Hakol bifnei Sarah kekof bifnei Adam. Anyone in front of Sarah would be like a monkey before a human being. Meaning, Sarah looked so beautiful, she was like another race. Another species, I should say. Sarah bifnei Chava kekof bifnei Adam. And Sarah in front of Chava? Like a monkey before a human being. Meaning Chava is a world apart. And then Chava before Adam HaRishon, also same distinction. Now clearly here, why are these distinct? What is the distinction between, let's say, Chava and Adam? And everybody else in Chava? Well, it's closer to Hashem's creation. Presumably whatever Hashem made is the most perfect. And whatever is a step removed is going to be a field apart. But when you get to Sarah, it's not a statement of how close she is to creation. Sarah's longer. She's 20 generations later. Sarah, it's not about that. With Sarah, it's about her beauty. And we have other Gemaras that talk about the beauty of the Imahot, So it sounds like beauty can reflect whatever is inside. If what's inside is beautiful, maybe the outside will be beautiful as well. So even though we have sources that look at beauty as deceptive, not all do. We have other sources that condemn the pursuit of beauty as denying the perfection of Hashem's creation. The classic Gemara in Tanis, which we're going to come back to, we're going to have to refer to later, the Gemara in Tanis Daf Chaf, right? Actually, I thought I brought it. Oh, I did. I brought it down in source number 11. If you jump down and take a look at it over there, the Maisa Shabar Rav Elazar Rabbi Shimon Migdal Gedor Mibeis Rabo, right? Rav Elazar Rabbi Shimon is coming from learning in the house of his Rebbe, in the yeshiva of his Rebbe, by Rachav Al Chamor, and he's riding a donkey, Umatayel Al Sfas Anar, traveling along the river. V'samach Simcha Gedola, he was very happy. V'isa Daito Gasa Olav, maybe a little too happy, a little too haughty. Mibdei Shalom HaTorah Harbi, he learned a lot of Torah, he felt really good, he had won a competition, he's very impressive. Nizdamein Lo Adam Echad. And a fellow encounters him, Shayamachar Biyoser, who is exceptionally ugly. Amarlo, Shalom Alecha, Rabbi, he says, greetings to you, Rabbi. Below half Zilo, didn't respond. Amarlo, instead of responding with Shalom, he said to him, Reka, empty one, Kar Machor Oso Haish. This fellow's really ugly. Shema Kolbani Yircha Machor and Kamoscha, tell me, is everybody in your city as ugly as you? Very hard to imagine a Tana with this kind of response to anybody. I don't care what kind of mood he's in. And the Mefarshim all tackle this and try to figure out what in the world is going on in this conversation. But the key is the next line. Omar Lo, the fellow responds to him, Eini Yodea, I don't know. Right? You ask me, are all the people in my city as ugly as I am? Go tell the craftsman who made me, boy, you made a really ugly vessel. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who has a very colorful life in the Gemara. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is the son of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. He lives with him in the cave and studies Torah, comes out and he burns the world, then he becomes a police officer for the Roman government. He has quite the career. So when he realizes his mistake, So he gets off the donkey and he throws himself down on the ground, and he asks him for forgiveness and so on. But the point is that the pursuit of beauty is taken as a statement of, I am displeased with what Hashem did. That's the way it looks. Such that the Tzitz Eliezer, jumping back now to source number 6, the Tzitz Eliezer deals with the issue of cosmetic surgery and the justification of pursuit of physical beauty, and he says it's an unworthy goal. He says it's not worthwhile, and it declares that Hashem's creation is flawed. Otherwise, why would you need to change things? So far, I would say, it's a negative to pursue beauty because you're condemning Hashem's creation. At the same time, we have a classic medrash in source number 7 involving Rabbi Akiva and Tunus Rufus, in which Tunus Rufus asks Rabbi Akiva, in number 7, he says, Eso Maisim Noem Shakadosh Baruch Hu Shabasa Radam, whose deeds are better, God's deeds or human deeds? So Rabbi Akiva says, human deeds are better. Tunus Rufus says to him, what are you talking about? Could people create the heavens and the earth? To which Rabbi Akiva replies, don't bring me something that's out of our ken, something that's beyond people. That's not fair. Talk about things that humans actually could create. So Tunus Rufus says to him, well, lama temulin, why do you circumcise yourselves? What's that about? You're improving on God's creation? To which Rabbi Akiva says, yeah, I knew that was where you were going the whole time. And he says, l'kachik damti, that's why I gave you the beginning that I did. And I said to you that people's deeds are better than God's deeds. We are in fact supposed to improve upon the world. And Rabbi Akiva, you could challenge Rabbi Akiva and say, well, bris milah is a mitzvah. However, Rabbi Akiva brings you the example of grain. He says, Hashem makes the grain, but we have to process it in order to make it into bread. So our deeds actually do perfect the world. And I brought you the Maharal in number 8, who says that which we innovate, that which we invent, is also part of Teva, is also part of Hashem's creation. So in terms of the classic arguments against pursuing beauty, either that beauty is a deceptive misrepresentation of human value, or that beautification is a denial of the perfection of Hashem's creation, you could bring sources for it, you could bring sources against. But at bottom, we have a recognition that beauty, in fact, as I said before, affects people's lives on the most basic levels. It affects marriage. It affects marriage in source number 9. I brought you a brisa from the Gemara at the end of Tanis regarding Tu B'Av. On Tu B'Av, when the women would go out and dance, and the men would get matched up with them. So Tana Rabbanan, in source number 9, Yefefio Shebaen Mahayu Omros, the Brisa says, what did the beautiful women say? Tenu Enechem Leyofi. They would say, look at beauty. She'en Ha'isha Leyofi. Because what are you really looking for anyway? Men really look for beauty in women. That's what men are really looking for in a spouse. Whereas the Miuchasos, the women who have great lineage, they said you should look at family. Because after all, what are you looking for? You're looking for good kids. So marry into a good family. But you see that they were articulating that beauty is what one is going to look for in a spouse. You have a Mishnah Nedarim in source number 10, a tragic story in which a gentleman had taken a vow he would not marry his niece. Going back to the days of the Gemara and even earlier, the practice of marrying one's niece where she couldn't find a shidduch, and this would be a way to take her into the household and protect her, was common. It was an act of chesed. You know, in the days of polygamy, he didn't have to disrupt his household. He would simply add somebody to the household, and he would take her in and support her, and that was considered to be an act of kindness. Well, this gentleman refused to marry his niece. And he vowed he wouldn't marry his niece. He vowed he wouldn't benefit her. And they brought her into the house of Rabbi Yishmael. And Rabbi Yishmael had her treated well, give her good food, and so on. And Rabbi Yishmael said to him, this girl over here, you see her, is that the one you took the vow from? And he said, no. And on that basis, Rabbi Yishmael said he's allowed to marry her. He removed the ned there. And at that point, he cried and he said, "Benos Yisrael knows." Hey, and he said, "The Jewish women are beautiful, but the poverty that they're in, unfortunately, covers up that beauty." And my point in bringing it is simply to say, this has always been recognized that people are biased by beauty. There are many examples of this. You can bring examples for men also regarding this. Women that could disqualify for marriage and so forth. But beauty affects marriage. Beauty affects self-image, right? Like the story with this fellow in number 11 that I mentioned before, who was insulted by Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. And beauty affects your relationship with God. If you take a look at source number 12, the Gemara in Shabbos, Brisa says, Rochets Adam Panav Yada Viragla Bechol Yom. One must bathe his face, his hands, and his feet every single day. Take a shower daily. Why? Bishvil Kono. Not for his own sake, for God's sake. Mishum Shenemar Kapal Hashem Lamaneu. Because the Pasuk says everything Hashem created was for his sake. Your existence is fundamentally supposed to be a Kiddush Hashem, a sanctification of God's name. You should conduct yourself in a way that respects the body that you've been given and beautifies it. So we see an element of beauty in terms of marriage, in terms of self-image, in terms of relationship with God. There's much more to be said about beauty, but the point is that halacha must recognize the importance of beauty to human activities and to human psychology. So what do we do when the pursuit of beauty seems to contradict halacha? Is there any leeway? What are our options? So here we get to the problem. And the problem is a basic prohibition called lo yilbash. Our issue here is when we're going to reject certain methods of beautification is not a rejection of beautification, but it's a rejection of particular activities because of a tangential issue, which we will now explain. Take a look at source number 13. Please. Everyone clear? We all get it? Okay. Number 13. Pasuk from Sefer Devarim. Lo yiyach li gever al isha, v'lo yilbash gever simlas isha. The kli, tool, implement, vessel, garment, whatever word you want to put on kli. Kli does not have a good English translation. That's why I like doing these shirim without translating the sources. The kli of a man shall not be on a woman. V'lo yilbash gever simlas isha. And a man shall not wear the garment of a female. Says the Gemara in Nazir, source number 14, Shalo yilbash ish simlas isha v'yeshev bein hanashim v'isha simlas ish v'teshev bein ha'anashim. We don't want men wearing women's clothing and going to sit among the women. Right? He dresses up as a woman in order to be able to get close to the women. And the woman should not wear the clothing of a man to be able to sit among the men. In other words, the concern here is for immorality. Right? That's our concern in this Gemara. The Rambam adds a level to this. He does it in his Sefer HaMitzvos. He writes more in the Mora Nevuchim, but I brought you the Sefer HaMitzvos in source number 15. The Rambam has a different concern. Vida, he says, you should know. Shezos ha-pi'ula, this activity, klomar, heyos ha-nashim miskashtos b'tachshidei ha-anashim or ha-anashim b'tachshidei ha-anashim, the idea of men wearing women's ornaments, women wearing men's ornaments, or whatever, vice versa. Pa'amim te'ase la'orer ha-teva lezima, sometimes it's done in order to awaken oneself to immorality. K'moshim mufursam, eitz la'zonim. He says, go ask people who are involved with that, and you'll find out. Upa'amim, but sometimes, ye'ase leminim me'avodas avodazara, k'moshim uvor b'sfamim chubarim lezeh. Sometimes it's actually an act of idolatry. There's an element of idolatry. They want to channel masculine forces, they want to channel feminine forces, and the priest will wear this garment, and the priest will wear that garment. It's an issue of idolatry. And that's a second explanation. The Sefer HaChinuch combines the two factors, both the issue of immorality and the issue of idolatry, and there's more to discuss about this. It comes up in terms of issues like, what if you wear only one garment of the opposite gender? So you can't be fooled, you can't fool anyone in that way. Let's pretend for the moment, this isn't necessarily true, okay? But let's pretend for a moment that we were to decide that a baseball cap was a man's garment. So if a woman wore a baseball cap, no one would think she was a man. That's not going to fool everybody. She's wearing everything else that a woman wears. So would there be any issue like that? Purim costumes is always a classic sheer Purim time. The heter has been classically for people to wear clothing of the opposite gender as a Purim costume. That's not going to be in this sheer. We're not discussing that. We're focused on hair.
How about a fedora that women as now wear? It always used to be a men's.
Can a garment change? Can a garment change its identity? Could a garment, the garment starts out as a male garment, it becomes a female garment, right? This is also an issue. That actually will become relevant as part of our discussion, so keep that question in mind. So, this is, this...
Can I
this lo yilbash pants, well, pants have other issues besides lo yilbash, right? Pants were also a separate consideration of whether they're considered sufficiently modest. But this is particularly applied regarding beautification of one's body. Because as far as the Gemara is concerned, beautifying one's body seems to generally be a feminine trait. So the Gemara in Shabbos, source number 16, the same sugya where we mentioned the brisa that says that you should take a shower every day, not literally take a shower, hands, feet, and face. Good luck. I think it's easier to just take a shower. But the same sugya, we have the following statement: Megar adam gildei tzoa v'gildei makasha al b'saro b'shvil tzaro. If somebody is pained by layers of dirt that are on him or scabs that are on his skin, he feels pain from them. They're bothering him. He's allowed to scrape them off. However, in b'shvil yapos, if it is to beautify himself, usher. Not allowed to do so. And Rashi writes, why? Lo yilbash. It's the issue of dressing as a woman dresses. Take a look at source number 17 and look at the Rambam. Havaras haseir mishar haguf. Removing hair from the rest of one's body, not from one's head. Right? Removing from one's head was what we talked about in the previous shir, and what Rabbi Ziering will talk about in the next shir. But now, removing hair from the rest of one's body, kigon beis hashechi, beis ha'erba, from the armpit, from private parts of the body, eino aser min ha'torah elemi divrei sofrim. He says, removing that hair is rabbinically prohibited. V'amaviro, makinos ha'makas mardus, and he gets the type of lashes that are associated with violating a rabbinic prohibition. And he says, b'med dvar ma'murim, and I'm going to skip the b'med dvar ma'murim for now, because we're going to have to come back to it, but then jump to the second paragraph, in number 17. Hamalakeit saros levanos mitoch hashkoros mirosho mizikano. If you pick out the white hairs from the black hairs on your head or on your beard, the mishialakeit sara achas loke. Pull out just one hair and you already get lashes. Mipnei sha'ada edi isha, because he has worn the ornaments of women. And if he dyes his hair black, once he dyes one hair, lashes. Now, keep in mind the contrast, right? The first paragraph was the Rabbanans. When you say loke, right, I underlined it for a reason. Loke means this is a deoraisa. Right? Dyeing hair, he says, is a deoraisa. Plucking out white hairs is a deoraisa. So. He's talking about men specifically, because his whole concern is lo yilbash. Yeah, good point. So our particular acts of beautification that we want to discuss may be under this isser, right? Dyeing hair, you already saw it in the Rambam. I brought you here in source number 18, the issue of plucking out white hairs from among black hairs, and it brings the pasuk of lo yilbash geber simlas isha. That's in number 18, it's the Gemara in Makos. The Shulchan Aruch mentions it in source number 19. He says explicitly, asur, and in parentheses, leish, there you go, lalakeit afilu seir echov lavan mitoch hashkaros. A man is not allowed to pluck a single white hair out of black hair because of lo yilbash gever. V'chein asur leish litzboan, he's not allowed to dye saros levanos sheyiyu shkaros, he's not allowed to dye white hair to make it black. Afilu sara achas, even just one hair. V'chein, and then the next line, aser leish leistakel b'mareh, no looking in mirrors. Where in the world did that come from? A Yerushalmi, source number 20. It's also with Tosafta. The Yerushalmi says there were 13 things. Yud Gimel Dvarim Hitziru Lebeis Rebbe. They only mention a few of them here in the Gemara. Maybe further on in the sugya they come back to it. But he says there were certain acts that were permitted for the household of Rebbe, who used to interact with the Roman government. Shiroin b'mara. One of them is they allowed them to look in a mirror. They also shoe misabra and kumi. There was a certain hairstyle that was common in the Roman aristocracy, so they were allowed to do that and teach their kids Greek, and that's its own discussion. But the Talmud Yerushalmi says, generally speaking, we would not permit looking in a mirror. And Tosfos picks up on it. Tosfos in source number 21, Mashma indicates sha'aser leish liros b'mara. A man is not allowed to look in a mirror. That's the pasuk. Don't wear the garment of a woman. A man should not. Excuse me. As he continues quoting the Targum, a man should not adjust himself, improve his appearance as women do. So now we have our problem. We have stated in the beginning, right? We took a good solid 10 to 15 minutes on it, that we value beauty, And that even though we are somewhat suspicious of the pursuit of beauty, nonetheless we recognize the importance it has in our day-to-day lives. At the same time, we have just decided in sources 13 to 21 that for a male to pursue beauty seems to be an inappropriate and indeed illegal feminine activity, such that certain activities are an iser d'oraisa, are biblically prohibited. Right? Dyeing the hair was singled out. Plucking out a gray hair was singled out as a biblically prohibited activity. It could be that the mirror is not. It could be the mirror is only derabanan. I'm not clear on where the line is and why certain activities here are d'oraisa, certain are derabanan. I think it's based on what I've read in the different shuvos. It seems like it depends on how clear it is that this is being done for beautification. The more clear it is that this is the pursuit of beauty, the more likely it is to be a d'oraisa. So people remove hair for many reasons. Right. So therefore, it's only a d'rabbanan. Yeah.
Is beautification the issur? Meaning that, is that our problem?
That's what it sounds like, no?
Yeah, as opposed to lo yilbash, right, which can change, right, with times.
Well, that's where we're going.
But I understand that's where you're going to go, but we can all do different things today than we... Mirrors, I think, are pretty common.
Well, mirrors are pretty common. The question is, are they right? But yes, this is where we have to go. Sorry? Tefillin mirrors, well, that's the question. But that's all part of this discussion. We have to figure that. We have to figure that out. Maybe we should ask for tefillin mirrors.
But that's not for beauty.
Hang on. We're getting there. So what we now understand is that there is a problem. Beauty is important, but don't beautify yourself. That's essentially where we are. So there are four heterim, right? There are four heterim for this. There really might only be three. It could be that I am separating out two things that I shouldn't, as we'll see along the way. Maybe I'm guilty of making four where there were only three, but you'll see. The first heter is the one that Mikey jumps on already, and that is where this action is really no longer considered a feminine action at all. And it's not so much a heter as a statement that this isn't done to the Isser at all. The Torah only prohibited that which is Beged Isha. This isn't Beged Isha. Even if it once was, it isn't any longer. Take a look at source number 22, where the Shulchan Aruch applies this. Somebody, a man, who removes hair from the armpit, from parts of the body that are private, they would give him rabbinic lashes. But when is that true? Only if it's uniquely feminine to remove such hair. Let him not adjust himself as women do. But in a place where men eliminate that hair as well, so we're not going to give him lashes for doing so. He is not in violation. The truth of the matter is, the wording is a little bit half-hearted. Right? If he did it, we're not going to whip him. Does not sound like a prescription. So that's why the Ramah needs to say, "Afil lechatchila shari." We mean to say, no, this is mutter, but raka chaverim nimnoim b'chol makom. But people who are chaverim not meaning friends, but chaverim meaning people who are committed to the observance of halacha, they will stay away from it anywhere, even in a place where women do this. Now, one of the questions you have to ask when you get into this is, so who defines what is a masculine or feminine practice, right? Your fedora case, now we come back to. Right? Who defines whether this is a masculine or feminine garment? Jews? Non-Jews? General society? How do you look at it? So the Prisha wasn't sure. This is a classic quote from the Prisha on the tour, source number 23. He says, it means non-Jews. Once that becomes the practice, that men do this too, that's the practice. And we learn from the non-Jewish practice. He says, you could also say it's referring to Jews. That if all of them start to do this, then we won't protest. What's his problem? Why is he doing this? What's his issue? His issue is, how did you get to that point where men are doing it? Right? If you're going to tell me it's defined by male practice, right? So the first man to do this gets whipped. We're not going to now use him to demonstrate that this is something men do also. Right? That makes no sense. So therefore, his first answer is to say, we're going by non-Jewish practice. There's nothing wrong with them doing it. And once enough of them do it, it becomes a masculine practice. And then his second answer is, if suddenly everybody is doing this, then it is defined as a masculine practice. Alan?
How about wigs and toupees?
Oh, boy.
Because when women are always wearing, when they're, since they're married, wearing wigs. Now,
yeah.
And we've seen olden pictures like George Washington, all these guys wearing
yeah. It's a very interesting question. Maybe, I mean, when we talk about hair transplants, we're going to talk about this a little bit. So let me hold off a little bit, but it's an excellent question. But the idea is where this is no longer feminine, then it's not under Beged Isha, with two important caveats. First of all, the Gra, I didn't bring it on the sheet, but the Gra on Kufnun Vav, Sivkat and Zayin, doesn't like this idea. Because the Gemara talks about certain activities which are permitted, and it asks, why are they permitted? And the Gemara never gives the answer of, well, that's talking about in a place where men do this too. So the Gra did not buy into this heter. He seemed to think that practices cannot jump ship. Once it's a feminine practice, it's always a feminine practice. And also, as we saw above, the Ramah says, Chaverim, stay away from it. And the Tshuvas von Haggadah for Sternbach is of the same view, that this is something that people should be machmed for, people should be careful about.
The Rambam also says that, though, in 17.
That has the idea of them, yeah, yeah that a practice could change.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. When you're the Vilna Gaon, you can argue with the Rambam too. So the first heter is if it's no longer feminine. The second heter is if there is a practical benefit, something to be gained. Right? The Gemara that talked about in source number 16, removing the scabs because they're causing you physical pain. So the Gemara said that is an okay thing to do. And the idea is this is not liyampos. This is not called beautification. The Isser is beautification, because that's what women do. This is not an act of beautification. This is an act of mitigating pain. Tosfos says, not only is it about mitigating physical pain, but also mitigating emotional pain. Take a look at source number 24, please. Tosfos says, on that Gemara about removing the scabs, Bishvil Tsaro, because of his pain, Vim Ein Lo Tsar Acher. If he has no pain, except that he's embarrassed to travel among people, shari, he's already allowed to remove it. What greater pain is there than a person being so embarrassed he won't go out in public? Of course that's pain.
So was talking about a Dorabanan or a Deoraisa there?
So it sounds like even a Deoraisa, because Tosus will say it's not under the Pasuk, because this is not called an act of women, because it's not a beautification act. The motivation becomes really important in this regard. And that's his position. The Shur Torah L'Shma has this in Tshuva Reish Tetzvav. We're going to see Tshuvos for Parnassa, where somebody can't get a job because he has gray hair. So we're going to talk about the ins and outs of that, or Moshe Feinstein has a Tshuva. But but that's your second head there.
What about sunbathing so they get a good tan?
Well, I think that's also under Nishmartim Odenav Shoseichem. You have to guard your lives. We believe that vitamin D is important, and so is skin cancer. So for that reason, you shouldn't be doing it. But I don't think that would be called Beged Isha. The question is, would you now say that that's a beautification which women do? I think in areas where people tan, it's both genders who tan. That would be my sense of it. I don't know. What do you say? Is tanning gender specific?
They have both indoors and outdoors.
Yeah, that's also true. I think in the Gemara they talk about tanning hides. They don't make a distinction between male or female. Okay. Sorry. Okay. So two heterim so far. These two heterim are simply removing the practice from the purview of the pasuk. If it's not feminine, and if it's for a practical benefit. The third heter, which really may be a subset of practical benefit, I break it out separately, is medical therapy. Medical therapies and activity that will prevent disgrace. This is not liyapos. This may be under practical benefit, like that tosvos, but I actually think that it's really its own issue based on the way that Poskim write about it. It's brought in the Darkei Moshe. Ramosha Isilis, in his commentary to the Tur, in source number 25, brings this regarding looking in a mirror. He notes this. He says, he quotes the Agos Asheri on the Rush. Ulusofrim ha'ma'amidim mara bifnehem. Scribes who put mirrors up in front of them. Umiskavnim lihistakel bosha lo yachshechu einehem. And they look in the mirror to keep their eyes from dimming. Some sense that you can save your eyesight by looking through a mirror instead of looking directly at whatever you're doing. I don't know what this is about in terms of one's vision. I suspect if you look it up, you can find someone who wrote a doctorate on medieval vision beliefs and eye muscle strain and whatever else, and the use of mirrors to mitigate it. I did not look. But he says, Shari, that will be permitted. You're now doing it for the sake of a practical medical benefit. He quotes the Ashri, and he quotes that from the Hagos Maimoni as well. And then he says, the smog permits if you're looking in the mirror in order to improve your vision. And flipping over to the next slide, if somebody looks in a mirror because there are feathers in his hair or there are stains on his face, and he wants to remove them so that he will not be shamed in front of others, mutter, that's allowed. His concern is only not for beautification, it's to keep himself from shame. The Talmud Chacham, and he says, how much more so if you're talking about a Talmud Chacham? Dilogara me rebbe shal bigdo darsel Talmud Chacham. The Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham can't go out with stained clothing. It's a chilul Hashem. So then, certainly here. So this is about
people
practical
mirrors to see if they're filling them right.
Yeah, correct.
That'd be okay.
Yeah, according to this, it would seem to be so. So the difference between this, between Hector number 2 and Hector number 3, is that Hector number 2 is that there is practical benefit in terms of something therapeutic. I'm sorry, not in terms of something therapeutic. There is practical benefit involved in doing something which improves one's appearance. Here the idea is that it's meant to prevent genai. It's meant to prevent disgrace. The Menachas Yitzchak in source number 26 applies this to a case which gets closer to the examples we're talking about. Somebody has a shuma, somebody has a mole, and the mole is producing white hair. So he says, "Hine pshita diabelas kihai mikramum." He says a wart like that, that is a mum, that's a blemish. Behine berefuas mum shebeguf bevadei emishum lo yilbash. He says, for sure there's no issue of lo yilbash, of not dressing as a woman, in removing something like that. And he says, the proof of it is the Gemara in Ksuvos that talks about a man going to a chacham and healing him of such a thing. So clearly this would be permitted. The Nishmas Avram quotes Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach with the same statement. Rav Shlomo Zalman has it in terms of a couple of cases. I brought you one of them here in source number 27, which is going to be our first example that we see of somebody dyeing hair. He says, Shalom Ori Harav Hagon Rabbi Yeshua Neuvert Shlita. Now is Atzal, unfortunately. The Rav Neuvert, author of Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, asked a question of Hagon Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach Atzal Halacha L'maisa. Bachur ben 20 shana shesaros rosho uzkano levanos. You have a kid who's 20 years old. His hair, his beard has gone white. Lo machmas machla, not from some illness. Umizbayesh lo tzeks beinu anoshim, and he's embarrassed to go out among people. Hayem muter lo, it's boos on shushkaros. Is he allowed to dye it black? V'amar hagon zatzal, shem muter lebachur litzboas hasaros shalo. And Rishon Mazalman said muter. In parentheses, no, we'll come back to later, he can't trick the shidduch that way. In other words, he can't pretend that his hair is naturally black. She has to know that he's dyeing his hair.
Which did?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, that's a very important question. Kadesh lo yizbayesh, she's allowed to do this to keep from embarrassment. Kisaros levanos bebachor tzayir nikramum, because people consider that a defect. Vein iser basarasmum, there's no iser in removing a blemish. So that is your third head there. You are allowed to wear, you are removing a blemish. You are allowed to wear, you are improving beauty for a practical purpose, like the job case, or because you can't go out in public as you are, and also where it's no longer feminine. The more I think about it, the more I think I shouldn't have separated out 2 and 3, and I feel like they're really overlapping a lot. I'm not 100% sure why I separated it at this point. But Hector number 4 is Kavod Habrios. So kavana brios is a much bigger topic, which I am going to shrink in order to fit it into our conversation here. We are taught, well, let me explain first. Kavana brios as a concept is human dignity. And the way it applies here is that even if an activity should be prohibited under lo yilbash gever simlas isha, but it's prohibited as a derabanan, we have reason to allow it anyway for the sake of a person's dignity. It's a different approach. It's not the approach of saying that, well, for, you know, to avoid embarrassment, it's not, that's not under the beautification at all. This is, no, it is under beautification, but we might permit it anyway. We have various sources for the idea of kavod habrios, various cases in which the Gemara is very concerned, and the Chumash is very concerned for a human being's dignity. Right now I jump to the Gemara in Brachos, source number 28. Gadol kavod habrios shedochas lo sasei shebe Torah. Human dignity is so important it overrides a biblical prohibition. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? I have a pasuk in Mishlei that says, in chachma vein tvuna vein eitzel neged Hashem. You can't come up with your own ideas of what should and shouldn't be when God said, asur. So their answer is, no. The prohibition that it overrides is lo sasur, of not violating the words of the Rabbanan. In other words, rabbinic prohibitions are overridden. The rabbis themselves are mochel on their kavod. Dan Feldman in his Sefer, the Right and the Good, has a nice discussion of this, of why kavod habrios overrides the Rabbanans. But but that's the basic principle, is we override rabbinic prohibitions in the name of preserving human dignity. And there is a wealth of applications of this. If you look on Wayu Torah, I had a shiur I gave a while back on human dignity in terms of medical halacha and various cases that come up. But just to show you here, in source number 29, a very basic case, the Chafetz Chaim in his Shaar HaTzion talks about a person who has some food stuck in his teeth on Shabbos, and he doesn't have a toothpick. So he says, you would be allowed to take a piece of wood, to adjust it with your fingers, not with a kli, but with your fingers, which is a shinli, and fix it such that it could function as a toothpick in order to poke out the meat that's between your teeth, or whatever food it is that's between your teeth. That's a derabanan, right? It's a deraisa with a shinli, right? You're adjusting, you're making this piece of wood useful in an unusual way. So it's deraisa with a shinli, and it's permitted for the sake of kavod habrios. That's a classic example. And again, there are many, many applications for this. I brought you here on the sheet, actually. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa has a note here that somebody would be allowed to use an inhaler to keep his nose from running if his nose running is embarrassing on Shabbos. Even though we have a derabbanan against medicines, the inhaler would be justified for it. The Orzarua has something about chewing something to ease your bad breath in private for kavod habrios. There's a discussion, the Nishmas Avram that I brought you in 31, about going outside with an insulin pump, wearing it with a shinoi where there's no eruv, in order to be able to circulate among people to go to a shir, to go to shul, because otherwise someone who's never in shul on Shabbos for a shir, and never in shul for davening, people are going to start to talk about him. They don't necessarily realize why. So on that basis, he allows him to go out to get to shul. There are many sources on this, many cases of it. There are limitations, though. So one limitation that's important is Rabbi Leo Bakshi Doron in source number 32. He says, something which is shameful to me, but not to most other people, is not a kavod habrios concern. You don't have the right to invent your own kavod habrios considerations. If something would not be shameful for most people, you can't claim, well, it's shameful for me. You know, where there's a certain class of people for whom it's shameful, that's a different story. You're a part of that class or you're not. But where, in general, it's not, and it's just your personal sensitivity, you can't make that argument in order to violate an isser. And the other is Rav Moshe Feinstein in source number 33, who says, you can't count in this embarrassment at doing a mitzvah. That's no good. You can't claim kavod habrios regarding doing a mitzvah. So so that's our fourth heter, though, right? Our first one is the act is no longer feminine. Second one is where there is a practical benefit in beautification. Third one is a medical therapy or activity in order to prevent ginai, to prevent disgrace for the person by removing a blemish. And then the fourth one is if it offends human dignity. Now, the difference is, and the reason why we highlight the difference for number four, as opposed to the other ones. And the reason why four is so important is because Kavod Abrios only works for a Derabanan, right? Whereas if you can make the argument that medical activities are not called beautification, or activities with a practical benefit are not called beautification, then it works even for things that otherwise would have been a Del Risa. So it's important to know which one is which. Okay. That's a key thing. In practice, avoiding embarrassment is identified by some as a practical benefit. I brought you there, Tosfos, as well as the Sri Deish, I think we're going to see. Some take avoiding embarrassment as a medical therapy. That's the Darkei Moshe Menchasiyot, like Shlomo Zalman. I think that was why I listed it as a separate principle, because they actually seem to break it out as a separate point. And some view it as Kavod Abrios, as human dignity. This is a very big deal, because if we're going to talk about dyeing hair that's gone gray in order to avoid embarrassment, well, it depends. Is dyeing a Del Risa or a Derabanan? If it's Del Risa, then I'm only allowed if it's practical benefit or medical therapy. If it's Derabanan, it works even for those who say that it's a Kavod Abrios issue. You follow? Are you with me? I feel like in the last couple of minutes I may have gone too quickly. Again, avoiding embarrassment could reasonably come under Heterim 2, 3, or 4. It could be considered practical benefit. The view of Tosfos is that, regarding beautifying yourself when you have these scabs on your skin. It could come under medical therapy, right? Like the Menchas Yitzchak, the case of the fellow with the wart that's sprouting white hair, the mole. Rosh Shlomo Zalman, on the case of the 20-year-old whose hair turned white. It could be considered a medical therapy, or it could be considered human dignity.
Psoriasis is an example.
I think that would be called medical, yeah. I think because it's a disease, I think it would come under the medical. That would be my gut. Yeah, I would think so. So the upshot of this, of what we're saying, is that if you take the view that avoiding embarrassment is practical benefit or is medical therapy, then it's mutter to do even Del Risas. If you hold the latter category, that it's human dignity, then it's a whole other story. So let's get to the applications, the cases that we talked about, the mirrors, the baldness treatment, the dyes. So when it comes to mirrors, what would you say, based on what we've said so far?
As long as you're not doing it just for beauty's sake, it should be okay.
Okay. Well, I think the first argument you'd make, especially if I take the preacher that we go by non-Jews as well, right, is that everybody looks in mirrors. In general, in society, everybody looks in mirrors, and that was what we saw in the Ramah. Take a look at source 35. I brought you the Ramah here. V'yesh omer b'hada aster liros b'mara hainu davke b'makom dein derech liros b'mara ragnoshim. Some say the prohibition against looking in a mirror is specifically where only women look in mirrors. But where everybody looks in a mirror is going to be mutter, right? The Ramah we saw before was dealing with the same heter for a different application. But that's the there is about removing hair. But the Ramah here says that you could do this. He's quoting the Ram, that you could do this in a place where men normally look in mirrors. Granted, the Vilna Gaon won't like it, but that's one heter. The other heter is practical gain. There's practical gain. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, source number 36, talks about where you're afraid the barber is about to get you. He's a dangerous man. He's holding a razor blade. You told him only the back of the neck, but you know he may not be listening. So in that case, the mirror might be useful.
Rearview mirror, then, same as
36. Correct. Yes. I might ask you really go to a different barber, but that's maybe an hour a day. There are a lot of barbers. That's a practical benefit. And the Shulchan Aruch says so. Take a look in source number 37, where he says, also ish listaka b'mare, he's not allowed to look in a mirror, because of lo yilbash geber. LMK mishum refua, unless it's for medical purposes, like he has a headache and looking in the mirror is going to help him. Osha misaber atzma, or if you're giving yourself a haircut, please use a mirror. Or it's in private with an idolater who's doing the haircut, and you're afraid again that he might take advantage of your vulnerability. So that's a second heter. The third heter we already saw before in the Darkei Moshe was to prevent genai, to prevent disgrace. You want to look at yourself and make sure that you're not dirty. And then finally, going back to our point about bathing that we mentioned before, because you want to take care of the body Hashem has given you. So the Stechemet in Oslamed, note 116, the quotes of the Tiferes Yisrael, which is here in source number 38, in which he says, "Mikol shkein hacha, the Talmud Chacham shenimtza revav al begad of chayav misa." He says, "Look, a Talmud Chacham with stain on his garments, the Gemara in Shabbos says, is liable for his life." The after ain't Talmud Chacham bisman hazeh. Granted that no one today qualifies as a Talmud Chacham, nonetheless, al kolpanim bisman hazeh. He says, in our day, 19th century Germany or Poland, depending on when in his life he was writing this. He says the honor of Torah has already gone down 10 degrees. That's a quote from Nach, for those who learn Nach. He says the dignity of Torah has descended 10 degrees. Adarabba, just the opposite. You have to be very careful for the honor of Torah. You may not qualify as a Talmud Chacham, but for this purpose you do. And he's going to be a source of mockery in everyone's eyes. So therefore, he says it is mutter, according to everybody, to use a mirror to make sure that you look good before going out. So everybody seems to permit use of the mirror today, whether it's because it's not a feminine activity, or whether it's because it's for a practical benefit. It's not considered to be for beautification. It's to prevent genai. It's that you look proper going out, representing Judaism. Okay. Mirrors, again, see your posting, but I think generally speaking, we're on safe ground. Even if you shouldn't dwell on the mirror exactly, perhaps. What about treatments for baldness?
The
Mishkan, they gave up their mirrors for the sake of the Kiyor. So there's an example we should follow, perhaps. Thank you, that's a very good point. Treatments for baldness are very interesting, because it's true that there are bald women. However, by and large, the population that is in need of hair treatments, right, whether you're talking about a wig that is because of baldness, or, you know, a toupee, or whether you're talking about Rogaine, or whether you're talking about a hair transplant, or whatever you're talking about, realistically, those tend to be men. So the argument could be made that hair replacement is a male activity to begin with. It's reminiscent of a very interesting conversation that Ramosha Feinstein has regarding taking a pill to darken one's hair. Take a look at source number 41. I think I ended up shuffling my sources because I'm in Minchas Yitzchak. I'm not up to yet. Okay. Take a look at 41. The Ramosha Feinstein asks a very interesting question. Apparently, there is a hair dyeing procedure. Now I understand why I did this. There's a hair dyeing procedure which can be done via a pill. I never heard of such a thing, but clearly it exists, or it existed, because Rav Moshe writes about it. And the question is, and this is what he deals with here in 41, he says, "Hanidon kanu im iser zedelo yilbash shu gamal kol tikune nashim hu al etzem hamaisa shalobe shu miskashe pamabushim uvikishutim shos hanashim." He says, "Is lo yilbash dressing up in the women's garment, the action of dressing up, or is it that you end up looking like a woman because you are wearing it?" He says the same thing is true here. Taking a pill is not inherently a female activity. We take pills all the time for all sorts of purposes, men and women. There's nothing feminine about taking a pill. However, if the result is what I'm concerned about, you end up with darkened hair. So maybe you should make the same argument over here. Women do a lot in order to improve their hair. They get a special shampoo, they do special treatments in order to improve the body of their hair. So maybe this should be a feminine activity, even though hair replacement is generally male. Maybe the result of having nicer looking hair is fundamentally feminine. That's my question. Ramosha there says that it's the result that matters. So maybe that should be the argument here. So I went hunting for a discussion of this, and I can't find anything about this Shaila anywhere. I think people just assume that it's considered to be not a female activity. I did see one writer on Rogaine in source number 39 who said this seems to be a standard treatment for men. And then I saw from the same website, but a different writer, someone on hair transplant who did seem to think that this was a problem. He said it has to have a practical benefit. So now I'm not sure how this website holds. The two different views. There were other ways you could read the second answer there. I gave you the links. You can look at them yourselves. But I do think fundamentally our third heter will apply. Meaning, if baldness is considered a mum, as we said at the outset, so you're repairing a mum. So therefore it's not under lo yilbash. And you would seem to be okay. However, the Minchas Yitzchak has a very interesting note, which I think must be kept in mind. The Minchas Yitzchak, in source number 40, and in the interest of time, I'm going to just say it outside. The Minchas Yitzchak says, if there is a phenomenon that exists naturally, then it's not so clear that it should be considered lo yilbash. I'm sorry, it's not so clear that it's considered a mum in a person if it shows up in them. It's one thing if it shows up unusually prematurely in somebody without any justification. So maybe there's a reason to say it's a mum. However, if it's your natural condition, in other words, the person goes bald at the age of 50, right? A man goes bald at the age of 50, it's hard to say that this isn't natural. This is what happens. You follow? So that argument may not be there. So what I'm trying to say on the hair replacement, again, always ask your posig, is that it would seem to be permitted just based on the lack of prohibiting literature, but honestly, I'm not sure which way we're going in terms of the heter, whether it's because we're saying it's a masculine activity, whether it's because we're saying that baldness is a mum. I think at a certain age, like the Minchas Yitzchak, it stops being considered a mum. This is not really clear to me. The dyeing of hair. This is the one where there's the most literature. So the argument that it's not a feminine act is rejected by Rav Moshe in that tshuva about pills in number 41. He doesn't buy that idea. Practical benefit for a job is cited by various poskim, the Levushei Mordechai, the Sridei Eish that I brought you in source number 42, the Rav Moshe Feinstein in the Igros Moshe, Yeridaya Beis Samach Aleph, Nishmas Avram brings it. They all say that it's okay for practical purposes. Somebody needs to get a job. He's allowed to do it. Rav Moshe makes the point there that we made earlier regarding the Shidduch. That if he's doing it in order to get a job, he has to make sure there's no onah. He can't fool his boss into thinking that he's younger than he is. Right? It's very important that you not be deceptive. Granted that, secular law may take care of that because the boss isn't allowed to ask. That's its own discussion. That's business out this year. The third heter, it's not for beautification at all, is brought by the Nishmas Avram, quoting Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach, quoting Rebbe Yashiv. They say that if someone's hair goes white when he is young, then it's considered a mum. It's not called beautification for you to repair it. And then there's the Kavod Abrios discussion, which leads to the poskim debating whether dyeing one's hair is a deoraisa or whether it is a derabanan. So those who say it's a deoraisa, like the Sanza Rebbe, the Divrei Chayim, I brought you in source number 44, do not allow it. They say dyeing your hair will be Kavod Abrios, and it's not allowed. This is a deoraisa. Whereas the Shut Sholom Eishiv of Yosef Shaul Nathanson that I brought you in 43 says dyeing hair is a derabanan. The Rambam thinks it's a deoraisa, but the Rashba, quoted the Beis Yosef, thinks it's a derabanan, and he wants to follow that view and say that it's permitted for Kavod Abrios. I should note the Stechemet, who says people staring at you and talking doesn't count as an embarrassing situation. So says the Stechemet in Os Lamed in note 116. In sum, it's very hard to apply a heter for dyeing one's hair if one is already of age for his hair to go gray. The only heter you'll really find is if you live in an area where it's common for men to do this, or you're talking about it being a practical benefit, or you rely on it being a derabanan only in Kavod Abrios. But generally speaking, if someone is already of age, it's difficult to find the heter. Some do suggest compromise approaches, which I'll just mention to close up. The Maharam Shik has this idea that maybe if his hair goes white, he should dye the white parts red. He has black hair, and has some red patches, and women don't do that for beauty. The Stechemed quotes an approach of dyeing your whole beard white. Now you won't have a problem. Everything will be white. And then the oddest one that I saw, the different kind, the Sanzer actually says, why don't you just use a depilatory and get rid of your beard? Right? We said last week that you can use depilatory cream. So if a little bit of your beard went white, so use a depilatory, don't worry about giluach and all that, and get rid of all of the beard, and then you have no problem. Then you're not gray anymore. That would be an additional solution. Compromise approaches, indeed.
You get cancer and then the hair will come out.
Unfortunately, that may be one way to deal with the issue. So you should go sun tanning. But I think what we've seen, hopefully what we've seen and understand, is that this is it's a fascinating ethical problem. We believe in people's need for beautification, but at the same time, the Torah is telling us not to act in certain ways that have been considered typically feminine historically. Acts of beautification were considered to be that, and that's still fine. Even though in today's age, the idea of beautification being particularly feminine seems a little bit odd. Nonetheless, the categories still exist, and we continue trying to apply them. Shkayach.